the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Good Tuesday morning. I must confess, I'm tired. I stayed up late last night. I got locked in. I did. And you would not believe why I got locked in. I don't know, Landon Schmidt. Were you up late watching anything last night?
No, I actually wasn't.
There is a thing called the Women's College World Series. Softball. I know, that sounds crazy. It sounds like, Wallo, do you have a life? What are you doing? I am telling you. I started doing the University of Memphis women's softball games a couple of years ago, and I played a lot of softball. Fast pitch, modified, and slow pitch as a younger man, and I have always loved the game. And really got into it when I started doing the Lady Tigers, even though they were really not very good. But it was just a fun thing to watch. Last night, both of the teams that have now become the finalists for the Women's College World Series, which, by the way, is a repeat, never happened before, a repeat from a year ago, both Texas and Texas Tech had to come from the elimination bracket. In other words, Tennessee was in the winner's bracket. All they had to do was win one game between the two, and Texas Tech had to win two over Alabama. So both Tennessee and Alabama were in the catbird seat. Texas, man, they've got a brilliant pitcher, just like Texas Tech does. They were just dominating in the two games, so they won them both. And that got Texas back into the final, and Texas was the winner a year ago. Here comes Texas Tech and Alabama. They are tied in the seventh inning. There is a girl named Mia Williams. She hits a walk-off home run against Alabama to get them to a second game. Landon Schmidt, does the name Mia Williams mean anything to you?
I cannot say that it does.
This is an interesting story. Mia Williams has a very famous father. Mia Williams' father has a major Memphis connection. Big name. I will tell you, Mia Williams' father went to the University of Florida, where Mia Williams went. And she transferred to Texas Tech. I'm guessing she got a lot of money because you know that guy Cody Campbell. He pays for any sport. The pitcher that they bought last year, who was brilliant last night, and her name escapes me at the moment.
Nyjah Kennedy.
Yeah, Nyjah Kennedy. She made $1 million last year. Who knows what they're paying her this year? She pitched over the last, I think they played three games in 24 hours. She actually pitched over 200 pitches. She pitched a two-hitter in the second game. Mia Williams hits this home run. Mia Williams had just transferred from Florida, so they played Florida earlier at the College World Series. She was getting abused, as was apparently her father, who got into it. But her father gets into it. So her father went to Florida. Her father was then a major draft pick. Her father has a Memphis connection. Her father was a showman. Her father liked to steal pens. Is it getting closer to you, Landon? Now, can you figure that out?
I'm really racking my brain over here.
Do you remember a column that Jeff Calkins had to write after this particular person would not allow him to write a story and stole his pen? This guy had a unique nickname because he was such a showman. Nickname was White Chocolate. Jason Williams' daughter is a great softball player. Jason Williams' daughter hit the walk-off home run to get Texas Tech to the second game where Kennedy was unhittable. And now it's Texas and Texas Tech that will battle for the national title. When it looked like it would be all SEC between Tennessee and Alabama, it was not that way. That's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing. I cannot believe I did not know that.
When Jason, when his daughter hits the home run, when Mia Williams hits the home run, Jake, they got him on tape. He goes nuts. It's really fun to watch. And if you look at her, she wears these big glasses, by the way. But if you look at her face, you can absolutely tell Jason Williams is her father. That really was truly a lot of fun. I want to thank Steve Earhart and the AutoZone Liberty Bowl and all those people. It was great. Great day, even though it was a long day. And then it got suspended because it never really rained, but there was a weather delay because of thunder and lightning. Lightning strike, you got to wait 30 minutes. So there was like a 45-minute to an hour delay, and then you go back out there, and then we got 13 holes in, and they suspended it again. And then that was it. But it made me start to think, Southwind. Have you ever played? I don't even know. Do you play golf, Landon Schmidt?
Not regularly, but I do play every now and again.
Okay, Southwind, it has my number. It intimidates me. I can play pretty good golf on most golf courses, but for whatever reason, I am totally intimidated by Southwind, and it gives me. First of all, it's in incredible condition, so. If they can get that golf course, today is June 2nd. If they were going to play the last week of May or early June and the conditions are like they are now, you might not have a great amount of rough like you can for the playoff. But I think you really could be successful. Based on what I saw yesterday, you could play the golf tournament as a signature event in late May or early June, like next week or whenever they sort out this new schedule. Because you know there's a big rumor that that is exactly what they're going to do. They're going to move Memphis's date because the players don't like the heat. They could have, based on the conditions I saw yesterday, they could play it. And also, I've got to confess, when you play that golf course and you realize length and no roll because of the Zoysia, you do get great lies. But it gives you a true appreciation for just how good those pros are because they make it look so easy. There's no problem with any kind of length or anything of that nature. They put the ball in spots where they have access. They know the green. I mean, like the ninth hole is the number one handicap, at least it was yesterday. And those guys, they all end up, even though it's a 400-yard hole, they end up with wedges. They never hardly go in the wall. It's amazing to me how good they are. And when you play the course and then you understand what they are up against, I think it gives you a total new appreciation for just how good those guys truly are. So I just want to give my sense of appreciation to AutoZone Liberty Bowl and Southwind for sure. What did we learn last week in Destin from Greg Sankey and the SEC pertaining to the college football playoff? We will chat with our good friend Ron Higgins down in Baton Rouge. That comes in the bottom half of the hour. And then it finally happened yesterday. Fred Smith Jr., actually signed his letter of intent. He became officially a Memphis Tiger, which means that today when they begin their workouts over at the Lori Walton Center, he will be on hand. I have no idea what the delay was all about. I have no idea if this was, his father trying to get more money or his father trying to get a job, or if there was Fred Smith Jr. having second doubts. I really don't know. I'm glad that he finally signed and that he will officially be with the team. The only guy not there is going to be Reed, the kid from Northwestern, played at USF, who is, five assists and I think it was 12 points in the Big Ten last year. That's pretty heady stuff. He's important. He's not going to be here for the first couple of days, but by the end of the week, they say he will be here. So they'll have all 14 players on hand. We will talk about that final segment of the day with our good friend Jason Muntz. We're going to talk NFL and NBA storylines because the finals begin tomorrow night. But there is an event happening on Friday for a really, really good cause. And we bring in the president of the Mid-South Lions Club, our good friend Brad Baker, who's been on the show before, mainly to plug this particular event. It's the 25th, maybe more, maybe a little less, who knows. But we think it's around the 25th golf tournament for the Lions Club. If you don't know what the Lions Club does, they are involved in helping people who don't have the means to get hearing aids, to have cataract surgery. It's all about sight and sound. And this is for the underprivileged in Tennessee, in Arkansas, in Mississippi, and Missouri. It takes in a lot. Brad Baker, you're a sweetheart of a guy. You've had this job for, it seems like, forever. And I know you serve so many people, and this is a fundraiser for that cause. Good morning. I know it's Friday at Cherokee. Give me some details.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me on. It is a pleasure to be with you and to talk about golf and to talk about our Mid-South Lions golf tournament that's going to be this Friday at Cherokee Valley. And we do have a few spots left, and if you're interested in playing golf, look, here's the thing with me, Dave. It's like you. You don't have to be a good golfer to play in this tournament. You just have to be able to pay the entry fee, okay?
Yeah.
That's the mainest thing, as we say in Arkansas. But, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. I've been at Mid-South now for 36 years. That's about half my life, and I really still enjoy helping people and making sure that we get the cataracts and the crossed eyes and the glaucomas and the diabetic retinopathies and all those big words that doctors use all the time. It's really great to be able to help as many people as we can. This year, I think we're going to break the $1.5 million in service to those in need.
Wow.
And we don't charge anything for our services. We actually have probably over 500 Lions clubs in the four-state area that we work with, and it's just been a pleasure to do that, and it's so rewarding to see the outcome of all of this work to raise money, just to give it away to help people, and it's a great, very rewarding job, and we are a great organization that helps a lot of people every single year with the help of so many surgeons and entities like the Methodist Hospital and Hamilton Eye Institute and the Church Health Center and so many other people that I can't even mention. But we're proud to be there and proud to help as many people as possible.
Now, you're in conjunction. You have your golf tournament Friday. Saturday, you have this big meeting, and I think I was reading in your emails, which you send out a ton of them. that Hamilton Eye Institute is having what you call a cataract-a-thon. I would like for you to sort of explain exactly what that is and how many people on Saturday will be getting unbelievable cataract surgery that suddenly you can see and colors and everything else and I just had cataract surgery myself this past year, so I understand what a revelation it is, because you have no idea some of the time how much you're missing.
Right. Well, Cataractathon came about in 2017. We were sitting in a room here visiting with Hamilton Eye Institute Lions Club, and they asked how we could do more service. And of course, I say, well, we could raise more money. And one fellow said, let's do a mission like we do to Guatemala and Mexico and Honduras, and let's do a mission to Memphis. And so that struck a chord with everyone, and the surgery center has been so kind as to donate the day, and the surgeons all donate their services. Everybody, including anesthesia and medical techs and nurses, and everybody donates their service. And Alcon donates breakfast and lunch, and we do that first one we did 32 surgeries in 2 days, and this one we plan to do about 25 surgeries, and they're all cataract surgeries. These are folks that have no way to do cataract surgery for themselves. In fact, if we didn't do this, they would probably just go blind or not be able to see. And you understand having surgery, what a difference it makes. And it is a sudden difference. Like you walk in not being able to see, and you walk out and you go, hey, there's leaves on those trees. And
they're green.
Says,
the color explosion.
one lady says, good news, bad news. And she says, the good news is I can see my husband again. And said, the bad news is I can see my husband again.
He so, got old.
You know, and so we're able to do that with all these partnerships that we have and the coordination that we have. And I think this will probably make us probably in the 200 to 225 surgeries through cataractathon. And we've actually infected people with the cataractathon. We did one in Kansas City this January. Mecca does one a year for us. And in Jackson, Mississippi, the Lions there have done a cataractathon. And also in Little Rock, UAMS has done a cataractathon or two. And so it's something that's grown out of 2017. And I probably am going to say 400 to 450 surgeries through all the cataractathons that we've done across the four states.
So you've got those four states, and you're saying this next year, or maybe this past year, $1.5 million worth of surgeries. Is that just eye, or does that include things that you do with hearing?
Well, that's mostly, I'm going to say 80% it's sight-related, vision-related. But we do have companies that help us with hearing aids that also goes into that amount of service that we do. Actually, we give out more hearing aids than we do anything else. That's the number one thing that we do. But probably 110 hearing aids, and I'm going to say 102 or 3 cataract surgeries, and the rest are chronic illnesses like diabetic retinopathy and glaucoma and some of those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's this is our biggest year of service ever, the 1.25 million or so. And we still got this month left in our year, so we're looking at least 1.5 and hopefully 1.6 million. And you know, we just couldn't do it without all the cooperation. And we don't really have any other streams of revenue other than the generosity of the public and Lions clubs, except for these fundraisers we do, like the golf tournament on Friday.
All right, so there's three things here in one question. Okay. One, if I wanted to be involved in the golf tournament, and by the way, Cherokee is a beautiful golf course. If you have never played it, here's your chance. It's not outrageously expensive, and you'll be helping out. Two, if you just wanted to give, how would they get a hold of you? And then three, and I don't really know what the qualifications are, but we have a big audience, and not every one of the people in this audience, you know, has a lot of money. There are people that are listening that may need your services, right, and don't even know that they would qualify. So how do you qualify for a hearing aid or a cataract surgery?
Okay, let me start with number one, the golf tournament Friday. We do have spots open. It's $600 a team for a four-person scramble. And you can sponsor a hole for $150. And if you want to get in the tournament, call us at 901-543-5466. And any extension will get you to us that we can tell you how to get in the tournament. And we would love to have some more teams in our tournament for sure. And, yeah, Cherokee Valley is a great course, very nice venue. And the lunch will be great. You know, if I'm in charge of food, we're going to have good food.
It's going to be good.
We got a good lunch planned, and we got plenty of prizes that you can win. So, again, 901-543-5466. Just give us a call. And the second part of your question is say it again.
It was how would you donate? Same number, 543-5466.
Okay, you can call us, or you can go to www.MidSouthLions.com. That's MidSouthLions.org, and there are plenty of little boxes there that you can click that says Donate Now. So MidSouthLions.org is the donor site, and we'd love to – I mean, we do depend on the public. We really do to do this. And the third part is you must meet federal poverty guidelines, which I believe one person in the family is like $15,800 a year. If you make under that amount, then you would qualify for service. You do have to go through a local Lions Club wherever you are, anywhere. And we've treated people from 18 states and I think 15 or 16 foreign countries, including Texas. And so we're able to do that. But, again, you just have to meet the poverty guidelines, meet with a local Lions Club, just go say, hey, look, I can't see. They can help you get to an optometrist. And you can get your exam, get your glasses if needed. If it's beyond glasses, like surgeries or retinopathy or something that's got to be treated by an ophthalmologist, then that's when you get a hold of us through the Lions Club. They contact us. They fill in an application. And once the application is completed and they're approved, if and the only qualification is a Lions Club sends it in, and if they meet the qualities for financial guidelines, and that's federal indigence guidelines as set by Congress every year, if they meet those guidelines and they're sponsored by a Lions Club, then and they get approved, then we take care of all their medical expenses related to sight or hearing, and then we go from there. And, a patient never gets a bill from us. We're like another organization in town. Your patient or your family never gets a bill.
Love it. And if you are wondering and you want to go to a Lions Club to see if you would qualify, 901-543-5466, that still works?
That still works. We can refer you to the local Lions Club that you would need to speak with. Depends on your zip code if you're in Memphis. And, of course, throughout the four-state area or beyond, there's Lions Clubs everywhere. So we can refer you to a Lions Club pretty much anywhere in the world if you need help.
Good luck, Brad. I know this is a tournament of love that you have for it. And it's at Cherokee Great Golf Course. Friday, there's only 14 teams, so there is room for more. And 543-5466 is the number. Don't win the tournament again, Brad. That's all I can say to you.
I'll try my best to play left-handed this time, baby.
All right. Enjoy. I hope it's a big hit like it usually is.
We're going to have a great time and a great group, and we're going to raise some good money to help a lot of people, and I appreciate you putting us on this morning.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Is Brad Baker from the Lions Club. Again, Friday at Cherokee, if you want to be a part of it. Simple, go to the website or 543-5466. That is the number. We sit in the Family Leisure Studios. It's here. Summer's here. Believe it or not, I could feel that moisture from that humidity yesterday. It was crazy, and I wanted to hop in my pool when I got home last night, but there was lightning around there, so I didn't do that. But the ultimate pool party is happening at Family Leisure, where you can get an above-ground pool at under $4,000. They're doing in-ground pools now, state-of-the-art for under $50,000, and all in-stock patio furniture to put around that pool. Price to move, a five-piece patio furniture set starts at under $1,000. Those outdoor sectionals, so cool, all the newest in fabric and design, under $1,300, and you get a free umbrella and base with select patio furniture sets. And if you mention Sports 56, $200 off the purchase of a pool or a spa. Just get to I-40 and Widen Road. This portion of the show also brought to you by Ken. That's Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. Ken knows it's a big deal. Are you ready to build that dream home? You've had this land for a long time. You're not sure how to utilize it. Ken knows. Maybe you're looking for land because you're ready to pull the trigger. Oh, yeah. No problem. Ken can find you land. Or maybe you're interested in staying where you are, but with modern amenities, with the media room, with the California closets and the island in the kitchen that's got a stove right in that island, a cooktop. They've got it all. They know how to do everything. They've been in business now 70 years, third generation. Williams now in the business. Ken Jr. runs it. He has for a number of years, and he's a unique guy that sees all the little details and the big picture all at once, and he can steer you in the right direction for whatever you may need. And here's the thing about Ken. He's got a philosophy. The job's really never done. You could have had this thing completed a year ago, and all of a sudden something pops up. Ken and his son William, they're there to make sure everything goes well. That's Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders, the place for renovation with innovation or that dream home. It's the only place to go, I think. That's Ken Garland. We take a break. When we come back, we're going down to Baton Rouge, and our good friend Ron Higgins is standing by. We talk with him in just a minute on Wallow and Friends.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Wallow and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
All we hear is Radio Gaga.
We head down to Baton Rouge last week. The SEC had their annual meetings down in Destin. Ron Higgins has been watching these over the years. I don't even want to say how many. But what did we learn from this year's edition, Mr. Higgins? Good morning.
Good morning. I think we learned that the SEC is not going to budge on their stances. Staying at 12 teams, they'd like to go to 16, but that's not what the Big Ten wants and other conferences. But the SEC is not going to budge. It's not so much Sankey as people understand that Sankey serves the presidents of the SEC. The presidents of the SEC, if these institution don't want it, then Sankey doesn't want it. It's not until the presidents of the institutions agrees that they want to change that they'll change it. And right now, they don't want to change it.
Do you think he has enough support within his own base of schools? Because there are some that I think would go along with it. Here's the issue. It's a really crazy dynamic. You got a few things going on here. One, you got a problem because not just the Big Ten, but it seems like all the other three Power Four conferences are willing to go to 24. I think you got the Group of Six even willing to go to the group to the 24 number, and you got Notre Dame that's willing to be involved in all of that. And on the other side of it, you've got Sankey that I don't think really wants to go more than 16, but you've got this other issue. If it goes beyond 16, that would mean another television entity would be involved, and that would be what the Big Ten wants, to bring their TV partner Fox into it. And I know ESPN doesn't want that. So that's a reason why Sankey could definitely drag his heels on all of this. So ultimately, what happens here?
Well, I really can't tell you. They're going to be a showdown. Unless the SEC is given a good reason to budge, they're not going to do it. They will not do that. And so that's just the way it is. They're not going to budge off of what they're going to do unless their presidents are convinced, or Sankey gives them information to convince the presidents that they should do this. They're not going to do it.
Well, and the other aspect of this is you would lose the conference championship games, which I'm really not for. And in the case of the SEC, it makes the most money of any conference championship. They say it's $100 million. I don't know where they'd make up the $100 million.
Exactly. So, again, that's another reason why the presidents, unless they see there's some way you can replace that money, they're not going to budge off of that. I mean, everybody's strapped for money. We know that with NIL, which is, long with being out of control. So we understand that unless you find money to replace money, it's not happening.
I don't know the way this is going to get resolved. I know this, the Kirby Smart talk of, well, we'll just pick up our own ball and we'll play amongst ourselves and that'll be the end of that. If you've got all the entities, all the three power conferences, Notre Dame and the Group of Six, saying we're doing this, I don't see how the SEC could just stand on their own. That would not be a financial model that would work in the long run.
No, I don't know what Kirby's talking about. I mean, just like sticking his chest out and trying to bluff somebody, but he's not the person. He's not the person who's doing the bluffing. Okay, I mean he has no he has dip power. Okay, Kirby's got to realize that the football coaches in this have zip power, and it's always been that way. The SEC works this way. When they go into business meetings in Destin, the football coaches, they come up with recommendations, and they give them the athletic directors, or basketball coaches, whatever. They give them to the athletic directors in their meetings, and the athletic directors decide if they want to pass them on, to the presidents for a vote. But ultimately, it's the presidents who always make the decisions. And athletic directors are the buffer between the presidents and the coaches. The coaches rarely get anything passed. I mean, they can talk all they want, but they have no power whatsoever except coaching their football teams.
It's going to be interesting. They got a deadline of December 1st. I don't think at ESPN, any of the bowls, really anybody in college sports wants to see that deadline extended again like they did last year. So something's going to have to get resolved on the number and the bowl alliances and everything else by December 1st. And I think they'll wait till near that date to get it all done.
I agree with you. I don't see them pushing anything sooner than that. I think they're going to take it down to the deadline. The SEC often meets during the year. I don't know if people know that. The athletic directors, they just don't show up and meet in Destin. They meet frequently during the year. They usually meet at the SEC football championship game. They meet at the SEC basketball tournament. They usually meet probably late in the summer before the start of football season, and sometime in the middle of football season they meet. So they meet quite a bit. And so this is not something like this will be ongoing discussions. Believe me, something that, again, like we said, it'll be taken up to the last deadline. Absolutely.
Last Thursday on this show, my baseball guy, Tim Doolin, you know Tim, he made the prediction that 7 SEC teams would make it to the College World Series. At this point, 7 have made Super Regionals. I don't know how many are hosting, but Oklahoma, Georgia, Auburn, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss are all in Super Regionals. All could make it to Omaha. I mean, that's incredible. If they got 7/8 of the teams, it would be like the SEC tournament in Hoover. It's crazy. I want to go back to the beginning because you were around for it. It seems to me it started with Mississippi State and probably your school, LSU. Where and when did baseball become so important to the Southeastern Conference?
Probably started, I'd say, in the mid-80s. You know, when Ron Pope came to the Mississippi State, I think it was late 70s, he decided, he wanted to show that baseball could be a sport that teams could win in and families could go to games and it could be profitable for universities. And Skip Bertman agreed with that when he came to LSU, like it was 80. And then they kind of pushed the agenda together. They did, if you do this thing right, you can make money. And that's all ADs wanted to hear is that we can make money. And at that point, you start to see, changes in facilities. Places start getting better stadiums and better coaches and more money went into it. And then TV bought into this thing and said, this is a pretty good product they're putting out there. And then the sport kind of developed all nationally, but for years, and it's probably still this way. I mean, I can't remember if it is or not. As Ron Polk always said, this is not fair. Women's volleyball has more scholarships than men's baseball, but somehow baseball built it. And you watch these. I mean, this was terrific TV this past week, and these regionals were unbelievably good. Super regionals are going to be just as good. You got SEC host Georgia and Athens against Mississippi State. Georgia won all 3 games this year against Mississippi State. All were pretty close. Auburn hosts against Ole Miss. They haven't played this year. Texas hosts against Oregon. Alabama hosts against St. John's. And this one's the most intriguing. It's not the SEC, but this team played LSU LSU won the national championship last year. This team played in LSU's regional in Baton Rouge. They actually beat LSU in the game. And they had to come in the winner's bracket. Little Rock and Troy. One of these teams is going to be in the College World Series.
I know,
and it kind of shows you that you can have enough parity in baseball to sneak a team like this through.
How about St. Mary's beating UCLA, and then they didn't even get to the Super Regional?
Right, exactly. I mean, so you got. Troy had to win it at Florida State to advance. A lot of 3 and 4 seeds who really pushed the agenda here.
Right.
And that's good. I think it's really it's been it's great to watch. The Women's World Series has been great to watch.
Oh my God, I stayed up late. I was talking about that. I stayed up late. I'm tired this morning because I had to watch that and both. Of the winners came out of the elimination bracket. Now you got a repeat of the national championship from a year ago. On paper, you would have thought it was going to be Alabama and Tennessee. Now it's a repeat of Texas and Texas Tech.
Yeah, Texas Tech had to win twice.
Yeah. So did Texas. They had to beat Tennessee twice.
The difference between this year and last year is that Texas Tech has a Florida transfer who's Jason Williams' daughter.
Right. We talked about that. Mia Williams hit the walk-off home run to get to a game, too.
And she can play. And she's really good. She's really good. There's some animosity about Texas Tech. Kind of like their football team. They feel like this was a team that was just bought. You know, they just bought a bunch of transfer talent in.
Well, and they got an easy schedule. That's what Steve Sarkisian was complaining about. But he won't play them.
Yeah. But in softball, Texas Tech has bought a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah. Well, that guy Cody Campbell buys all these. He's paid $1 million for that young lady, Kennedy.
There's that angle. So this is, and plus you got the whole Sarkisian thing with football. So this is really good. It's like, you know, weeks after Sarkisian was mouthing off about Texas Tech and talking about Ole Miss and basket weaving, now they got Texas Tech's got to play Texas for a national championship in women's softball. And this is awesome. So you love all this drama.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, you mentioned there's two SEC teams in the same super regional, correct?
Only
five could go.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, State's got a tough road playing at Georgia. Like I said, right. Georgia won all three games at State this year. Ole Miss and Auburn are really intriguing. Auburn had to come out of the loser's bracket to win their regional. And Ole Miss,
that's probably at Auburn, right? It's not. It's not in Oxford,
Auburn. Right? Yeah, but Ole Miss probably played the best, really, besides Georgia, of any team in a regional. They had to win a road regional to get here, and they didn't drop a game, I don't believe, and they played really well. So, you know, this is. I mean, the teams that you figure would be there. Are kind of there. There's a few, you know, outliers. You know, Kentucky really lost their regional, West Virginia. Oklahoma had to go to, I think, had to go to loser's bracket to win it at Georgia Tech to advance to a regional and play at Kansas. So, I mean, you know, USC just hammered A&M last night in a regional final at A&M,
right.
which was stunning. And they advanced against North Carolina. So, it's like, I like this. It's got a flavor of a bunch of different leagues and a couple of, you know, Cal Poly, you know, is in there. St. John's, Little Rock, and Troy, teams you don't expect. Most of the time, you don't expect Northern teams to make a College World Series because they're at a disadvantage at the start of the year.
Right, no
doubt. Have to play on the road because of weather.
I can remember my alma mater used to go. They started their season in Florida. They would be gone for, I don't know how they went to class, but
right.
They'd be gone for 3-4 weeks. It was crazy. But last thing, back to our premise about the importance of baseball to the SEC, I want to say the first team that really cashed in and made money on baseball was Ron Polk and Mississippi State. I think he was
correct.
The one that ushered it all in. He might be the pioneer of baseball becoming a revenue stream.
I believe he's the godfather of college baseball. You know, there's been a lot of great coaches like around his time before him. Rod Dedeaux at USC, Gustafson at Texas. But Ron really kind of showed the way how you could totally market a team and, you know, market towards your fans and make college baseball really probably one of the most pure sports there is among college sports. I mean, these are, even now with transfers that you buy, these are good, solid human beings who are good kids, and they relate well to the fans at their institutions, and they understand they're there to represent the institution, even though they may be, you know, playing 1 year there. I'll give you an example: Paul Skeens at LSU for
right.
this 1 year. You couldn't have asked for a better representative for LSU. You couldn't ask for a better guy. And I think baseball really recruits high quality guys, college baseball, even out of the portal. And I think it makes a difference. It makes a difference to fans for sure. And I think that's part of the reason the game has grown in popularity, because you have likable players who relate to fans. They stay after games to sign autographs. They relate to kids. You know, they hit a foul ball, they turn in the stands, you know, for kids to keep. It's a really a family sport, and I think it really started with Ron Polk. And Skip Bertman kind of piggybacked off of that.
I agree with that.
Together they grew it, yeah.
That's our SEC historian, Ron Higgins. We'll talk again next week. Thank you, my friend.
All right, take care. We'll see you.
There we go. That's Ron Higgins and that SEC baseball monster. They're gonna. Well, we know they got a two in because they got two super regionals they're playing. But I wouldn't be shocked if they got five in. I really would not. And Tim Doolin again, he said seven last week. He's going to be pretty darn close. We got to take a break. We're talking Tiger hoops with the man, Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal. He comes your way in just a minute.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
So 2 days ago, the news came out Fred Smith was going to be at the U of M workouts, which start today, which was interesting to me because he hadn't signed his letter of intent yet. So officially, he couldn't be a Tiger. So how was that going to work out? How could he come and work out without signing? And lo and behold, yesterday, the freshman-to-be from Briarcrest High School, two-time state player of the year, the four-star prospect, signed his papers. Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal, the beat writer extraordinaire, joins us every Tuesday in this time slot. What the heck happened, Jason, finally to make Fred Smith sign the paper? Good morning.
Good morning, Woolo. Yeah, you know, it's again, for several weeks, we've been trying to get a hold of Fred Smith and or his father, Fred Smith Sr., to ask these questions. Try and figure out exactly what's been going on, but you know, up until now, I still haven't gotten a chance to talk to either one of them, and so you know, we're kind of left to talk about what we're, you know, things that we're hearing. And I mean, I think it's pretty well understood by now, you know, that's what the word has been, is that it's the same as it's been for a couple of weeks, that they were putting off signing until now because they were in search of something more, whether they were trying to get it. I don't think it mattered necessarily where they got it from, whether it was from Memphis or somewhere else, but ultimately, you know, from what I understand, what they were looking for just never materialized. And so,
well, what do you think that was? Was that money? Was he wanting more money after the original price? Or was that to give Fred Smith Sr., who has posted so many different things of him as the trainer, was he looking to be on a staff somewhere?
Well, so I've the first thing that I heard was that it was over money, was that they were looking to get more from Memphis than they were initially than was initially agreed upon, and then, you know, as the days and weeks went along, you start paying closer attention to social media and you know, to your point about what you know, some of the stuff that's been posted, like his father, Fred Smith Sr., who had been on the coaching staff at Briarcrest with you know, as his son was there for 4 years playing at Briarcrest, he was on staff there for those 4 years, and he's not any longer. And so he was going out of his way for, you know, like I said, the last few weeks on social media to, you know, like sort of stump for himself. And really going a great distance to shine a light on himself as a development coach and a trainer and these sorts of things, and posting workout video after workout video after workout video with his son, you know, again, just sort of singing his own praises and going so far as to say, you know, like speaking in the third person in a lot of these posts, that Coach Fred Smith would make a great player development coach at the Division I collegiate level. You know, I saw that multiple times. And so, yeah, like, I haven't heard that from a any substantiated, you know, I haven't heard anything substantiated about that being part of his motivation for holding out. But, you know, you kind of read the writing on the wall and you put two and two together. And I'm sure that that was, I mean, it's feasible that that was part of the calculus as well.
Well, that now it's over. He's signed.
It is over.
And Fred Smith Sr., as far as I know, is not on the staff. And, now it begins. He tries to compete for playing time, which we will see. Yeah, you also wrote a very interesting article this past week. And this is all about Penny's growth and his attitude changing, where he decided that he would take this personality test that somebody had devised. And then he decided he would give his staff that same test and players that he was interested in that same test to see if there would be a fit. I find that to be a pretty new wrinkle. I'm not sure and it's probably happened sometime in the past, but I've never heard of it.
At Memphis, especially under Penny Hardaway, no. Like that has never been part of the procedure or the recruiting, you know, the recruiting process or the screening process during recruiting or whatever. Yeah, that's not been anything that's ever been administered before, at least under Penny Hardaway. Now, it is not uncommon for, especially, you know, as the transfer portal, you know, become like this era and the NIL era and all that stuff, like, it's not uncommon for programs to use this sort of thing. And it's a company called Profile is the name of the company. And basically they specialize in these sorts of things. Like they, you know, come up with these tests that let you know, they provide, you know, more insight, like based on the way people answer certain questions, it lets you know certain things about them. And this is not specific to sports. I mean, you know, like these sorts of things are available at a lot of places, and I think a lot of companies do these sorts of things in their own screening processes. But yeah, it you know, the way Penny explained it was like, you know, it lets you know how players respond to leadership, like how they respond to adversity, they did this with, like, the goal in their mind was to, you know, try and leverage this tool to prevent some of the issues that came up last year.
Huh.
And perhaps
or 3 years ago, too. That. Yeah, I agree. Because both those teams ended up not liking each other.
Right.
And
being motivated by different things, yeah, other than what they should have been motivated by.
I think this is very cool. My question is, so if you came in for your workout, is that when you were administered the test? And do you think there are some guys that might have come for that if that's when they gave the test? And then they worked them out, but they go, you know what? This guy doesn't mesh with the guys that we have. Had nothing to do with the physical workout. We're sending them. We're not interested. We're not going to offer. I mean, do you think that scenario played out at all?
Yes, it's my understanding that the tests were given during the recruiting process, not after they had signed. Like, it was done before that, and it was obviously, you know, some people didn't actually come in for a physical visit. Like, Luke Almodovar didn't come in for a visit in person, and I think I don't think Jaden Reed did either. And so, or maybe no, he did. There was one or two others who did not come in for a visit, so they weren't always administered in person. But yeah, like, it was. There were a lot of guys that you know took the test who either they decided to go elsewhere because for whatever reason they just didn't. They didn't pick Memphis. But yeah, like I think it's totally conceivable that it's at least possible. It's plausible that someone during the recruiting process took the test for Memphis, and Memphis, based on the results, went a different direction.
Yeah.
I don't know that for certain, but you would think that that's at least somewhat likely.
Yeah. Last thing, I know you don't have a whole lot of insight, but I love your thoughts about it. You know, 2 weeks ago, Charles Huff, Tiger football coach, went and spoke to the Rotary and talked about Memphis's plan to being in a Power Four conference around the year 2028. Yesterday, on these airwaves, with Eli, he was out at Southwind at that time, and Dr. Hargrave was playing in the St. Jude tournament, part of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl deal. And he reiterated that there's the sense that they have that around 27-28, there will be a realignment again, and that they are gearing everything they have. And that could be finances, that could be facilities, that could be everything with fundraising and everything they can think of to get their ducks in a row to be included in what could be the final shuffle for four power conferences. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that sounds great. I just hope that, you know, like this stuff changes so fast. And that's the sort of like hold your breath type of thing, or don't hold your breath type of thing. Like, because again, it is so fluid and it changes so much, even from seemingly just week to week or day to day even, that are we sure, are we 100% sure that what is considered a power conference today in June of 2026 will still be considered a power conference in 2028 or 2027 or whatever the date is that they're sort of pinpointing? I just am not totally convinced of that. I mean, like, because if we're thinking, hey, Memphis took its big swing at the Big 12 and they were rebuffed and it didn't work out. And so like there's a thought maybe there that ship at least isn't, you know, it might not be the top option for Memphis. Like, okay, so then you go to the next one. That would be the ACC. Most people agree that it would be the ACC. I mean, like, honestly.
Well, is Duke, North Carolina, Clemson, are they in that conference? Louisville and Cincinnati probably are. And the other question we don't know is, would there be 424 or 96 elite teams? If that's the case, I do think Memphis and South Florida get in. I don't know which league it would be. I know it wouldn't be the SEC because they're going to take the Clemson and the North Carolina. But I guess it's all going to play out sooner or later. But they're pretty sure about 28, and that's pretty shocking to me.
I will say this. I think the SEC is most likely going to take Virginia and North Carolina.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like, depending on how that shakes out, does the ACC do they just bust it all up? And then does the Pac-12 start busting up? Does the Mountain West start busting up? And there's a mad scramble for, like, you know, new conference that would include potentially Memphis and South Florida and potentially some of these teams from the ACC that don't get gobbled up or whatever. I mean, to me, there's just and is that conference then considered a power conference? I don't know.
We'll see.
What I do feel confident of is that where Memphis is today, they will be in a better situation in a few years than they are today. I just, you know, like, we'll see. We'll see if it's a quote-unquote power league. We'll see.
He's Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal. Thank you, Munns. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Willow.
And that'll do it for us. Jason, brought to you by Miramichi. Miramichi is the full golf experience. Not in Millington and Woodstock. It's 25 minutes from my driveway. Once you get there, you'll just be amazed at how pretty it is and the natural beauty that is all around you. Then you'll love the clubhouse. You'll love the practice facility. It's the best practice facility of any public club. I promise you. They've got the big driving range. They've got a member section. You can be a member, and it's really reasonable. They have different rates. Go ask about membership. They also have these facilities where you can have a chipping green, you can have a sand trap, learn how to do that, the biggest putting green that you want. I mean, it's just the place to learn the game. And then there's the beauty of the golf course. You can play it back over 7,000 yards like you do for college tournaments or AJGA events, or you can play it up like I like to play. It's the total golf experience. Again, 25 minutes from East Memphis. Go check them out. You'll thank me later. Tell them we sent you when you go to Miramichi. That'll do it for us. Johnny Radio is up next. We'll see you tomorrow.